This time tomorrow, so this time Saturday morning, I will already be awake and getting ready to hop in the car and head to the site of my 8th half marathon, and I'm not looking forward to it. That's pretty much the case all the time, but it's supposed to rain, not the tropical storm that we had a year ago, but it is supposed to rain, and I don't want to run in the rain, but also just nervous, as always, about the 13 miles and how it's going to hurt, and the fact that there'll be light streaming into our windows tonight. Oh, when I'm trying to sleep.
Not if you get the big searchlight.
The big gun.
Go get the
proverbial. The big proverbial gun.
Movie set light. Go get a big movie set light and put it right in your backyard.
Oh, my gosh. Good morning to you. It's a Friday. I severely and sincerely hope with all of my heart that you do not have difficult neighbors. That's my wish for you on this Friday. Also, for those of you who are dealing with Hurricane Helene, I know that there is flooding in Georgia. They're talking about really high creek levels in the Atlanta area, the kind they haven't seen in over a decade. And the storm has got 5 states of emergency. There's already been roughly 2 million people or 2 million customers, left without power. And so it's a devastating storm. And while it is moving quickly, it is ginormous. It's a category 1. Oh, no, I take it back. It's been downgraded to a tropical storm. So that's good. As of 5 o'clock in the southeast, 5 a.m. in the southeast, it's been downgraded to a tropical storm. But still a lot of rain, a lot of water, a lot of wind, and a lot of people in its wake now. So it looks like it's crossing the border, maybe straddling right now between Georgia and South Carolina, and then on into North Carolina as well. So please take care of yourself, your families, your pets. And if you have to take shelter, please, please, please be safe and make smart decisions. We're always glad to hear from you, especially if you're in the storm. You can find us online at A-Law Radio. Not that we are important, but we do like to know that you're safe. And then our Facebook page as well. We're looking ahead to week 4 in the NFL. So we've got our poll up, the after hours game of the week. Right now, it's a clear front runner. Last week, your choice for game of the week was Ravens Cowboys. And while it turned out to be competitive because of a late fourth quarter surge by Dallas, it really wasn't a competitive game for the first 2.5 quarters, 3 quarters, really. So this week, you've got a clear front runner that involves one of those same teams. No, not Cowboys Giants. So you can check it out and see if you would like to cast your vote in a different direction. I'm actually going Vikings Packers for a bunch of reasons. This is my choice for game of the week. Not only is Minnesota 3-0, and this NFC North division is shaping up to be a much tougher fight than maybe what was expected to start the year, thanks to Minnesota. But also, I'm excited to see Aaron Jones back at Green Bay, Lambeau Field, the type of reception he will get. But also, the Vikings are going to be looking for him early because they know he wants his moment. He wants his Lambeau leap. We do think that other than bruises, Sam Darnold is going to be fine to play. Don't know yet about Jordan Love, but could you imagine if he's back for week number 4 and the roar of the crowd there at Lambeau? It's one of my favorite places to watch a game. Been there on game day before, actually for a Bears-Packers game, which was pretty insane. The atmosphere down in the field, I mean, there's just the cacophony of sound that comes from Lambeau. So that's my choice. It's a good early season gauge for both of these teams, Vikings and Packers, but also love the Malik Willis element and the fact that they've been able to design a game plan, Matt LaFleur and his coaching staff, a game plan that fits Malik well. And he's executed. He's not turning the ball over, which is smart. And so that's going to be a huge battle for early NFC North. I don't say supremacy because that's taking it a bit too far, but an edge early on in the NFC North. We've also got Seahawks and Lions that take place on Monday night. And so each of the 3-0 teams, except for, who are we missing? We've got Bills, Chiefs, Steelers. Steelers, Colts is not in the poll, but we've got the other 4 3-0 teams. And it's not meant as a nod of disrespect to the Steelers.
When that happens is a component of the consideration.
Oh, he knows it's a component of the consideration, only that the matchup itself is maybe not one we expected could earn Game of the Week odds. So
that's ball in life as well.
See, that's what happens. You take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and there you have ball and life coming from Mike Tomlin.
Ball and life as well.
So on our social media, you can find it there. Looking to hear from you. A lot of you weighing in from the Bay Area, especially Oakland sports fans, about what was the last ever baseball game at the Oakland Coliseum featuring the A's that have called it home for nearly 60 years.
Now the 1-2 pitch. Here it is by Mason. He turns. He's ready. He throws in. It's swung on and hit to third. It was left up with it. Schumann, he turns. He throws, and the A's have won it. Mason Miller slams the door on the Rangers as the curtain comes down on 57 incredible years of A's baseball at the Coliseum. It's over. It is over after 57 years of thrills, of heartbreak, but always a sense of community, of fans belonging to something bigger, something special. It was baseball. It was Oakland A's baseball that brought so many people together. There's, of course, a profound sense of loss, of hurt, and yet the memories hopefully will last forever. May those memories be a blessing.
Here's the 1-2, Jankowski to Schumann. And the ground ball will end things. A 3-2 win for the Oakland Athletics. One more win for the Oakland fans.
A W on a day that everybody in the Bay needed one.
The final calls from both the radio team, that's Ken Korak as the longtime voice of the A's, as well as the broadcast team on NBC Sports California. And the fans, now we heard from some fans who were at the stadium on Wednesday and again there on Thursday. The fans stayed around. It was a big party, according to one of our callers who was there on Thursday afternoon. And he said, once Mark Kotze got out on the field and addressed the fans who stuck around, and he had the team out there with him, staff members on the field as well, and he started leading the crowd in chants. Once that happened, our caller, who was there on Thursday, told us that the atmosphere really changed and the mood started to turn somber as reality set in.
There are no better fans than you guys. Thank you all for loving the game of baseball. Thank you for your lifelong support of the Oakland A's. And last, I want to thank you guys for coming out today to share this moment with the club that I'm so proud of. We've played our asses off this year. We still got three left, gentlemen. I think we all should pay homage to this amazing stadium that we've had the privilege and pleasure of enjoying for 57 years. And I ask you for one more time to start the greatest cheer in baseball. Let's go, Oakland!
That was a playoff environment. That's what it felt like. But then after the game, obviously, you see, with Kotze's message and the chant and everything else, you see people getting emotional. And, yeah, that hits you hard because I think there's really, really good people here.
You could feel the love for every one of us in this uniform representing this city of Oakland, you know, and they were grateful.
The comments from Mark Kotze, before that Brent Rooker, the DH, and to a man, they were talking about the atmosphere with the near 46,000 fans that were in attendance and a huge crowd the night before as well. And so, yes, the A's get a send-off, three more games on the road, but then the next couple seasons, we think, in Sacramento at a minor league ballpark, as well as the planned move to Las Vegas. And there are a lot of hurt feelings. There are a lot of bitter fans who, and I think rightfully so, recognize that the owner, John Fisher, didn't want what the city had to offer, didn't actually want to keep the team there in Alameda County, instead really wanted to go to Vegas. And he's not alone. The rest of the owners in Major League Baseball could have said, no, we don't think this is the right move. But it's always about the bottom line. It's never about the fans, as much as owners like to say that when they win. I mean, this guy and his front office carried out his wishes, didn't put a competent roster together year after year, especially the last few years. Their payroll is consistently among the lowest in the league. And while paying guys a lot of money doesn't always guarantee that you'll have a winning team, and there's plenty of examples of that, it makes it a hell of a lot harder to compete on a consistent basis if you do not have a roster that is one with free agents who are proven veterans, proven winners. And it's hard to attract free agents to a place like the Oakland Coliseum. No doubt it needed work. It needed a huge facelift. It needed money sunk into it. It was a mess. It was a disaster, whether you talk about players and their clubhouses and just the facilities being woefully inadequate, flooding over the course of the last decade plus. And then the fans, not having a stadium experience that is so like all of the others around the country. And I can certainly understand why they didn't want to buy tickets and continue to line the pockets of the owner of the A's, who they feel like is stabbing them in the back, which is one reason why the team was averaging roughly 10,000 fans in attendance. And so it's not been like the last two games, but the fans showed up and wanted to make sure they had that last experience. And so there are a lot of different videos out there from all perspectives, right? Guys who worked there, guys who played there, fans who were attending and are heartbroken. And we've heard from a bunch of you. I think that, again, it's hard to imagine how much this stings if you've not been through it. But if you're a member of a fan base that's lost a team but then gotten a team back, maybe it helps a little bit. I think in the case of Oakland, talk about just a triple play, a triple whammy, if you will, that just changes the entire economy of that city. And I know that the Warriors are still technically in the Bay Area, but if you think about losing the Raiders and losing the A's in the span of, 3 years, the number of people who are employed by the Coliseum for those events, the number of people who worked with the teams in the area, the concessions, the parking. I mean, these are entire industries. We talked about this during the pandemic when all of these sports stadiums and sports teams and leagues shut down. There are hundreds and hundreds of people who are out of work, who are employed, or whose economy, whose industries depend upon the people who are there in town for these events. And so to lose both of your pro sports teams in the span of a couple of years really does impact the industry and the economy in Oakland as well. And so I hope people are thinking about that. We've heard from fans who have different perspectives. Some say they will continue to support the team. Ryan from Sacramento called after being at the last game and said he's really looking forward to going to games in Sacramento. It's actually going to be easier, and he wants to be able to support the team, and he's considering following them to Vegas, meaning he'll continue to support them once they become the Vegas A's, where Percy, who called us from Oakland, said, heck no, he is not supporting the team. He's done because he doesn't want to support that owner any longer. So a lot of mixed emotions. I know there are plenty of fan bases around the country that can identify, but to lose two teams in the span of 3 years, that's extra painful and extra poignant. But the fans showed up and did the A's proud and did themselves proud in this last series. Again, at A-Law Radio, our Facebook page, too, you can take our Game of the Week poll, Cowboys and Giants. We'll get back to them a little bit on the back of the hour, but looking at some of the games this weekend, including Georgia-Alabama, because that's the doozy in college. Good morning to you. Please stay safe if you're in the path of this Hurricane Helene. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Burrow under center. Play action fake. Five-step drop. Deep ball baby. For Chase.
Yeah.
Got it. At the five. Touchdown. Bengals. Joe Burrow floating a beautiful ball downfield. Jamar Chase doing the gritty. And the Bengals score a touchdown on their opening drive.
Hits, misses, and messes. Time to talk football after hours with Amy Lawrence.
Good morning to you. It's a Football Friday. Now we're getting set for some big games coming up this weekend, both the NFL and college ranks. We've got our poll up, so you can find that on social media. Dan Hoard, Dave Lapham on the Bengals Radio Network. Now, I don't have to tell Bengals fans, I don't have to tell any fans, the dire straits of teams that are now 0-3. Only a half dozen teams have ever made the playoffs after starting 0-3, though the Bengals, they've started 0-2, five of the last six years. So they're familiar with at least starting slowly. Dang it, should have remembered that before I picked them week one in the Survivor pool. I will never do that again. Anyway, they played a lot better. They played really well against the Chiefs in week number two. And of course, offensively had more than enough points in their last game that was on Monday night. Remember, it was part of not quite a doubleheader, more straddled. But yeah, to be able to put up the points that they had against the Commanders, terrific. Just their defense couldn't stop the rookie Jaden Daniels or any of his targets. Well, Jamar Chase is back on track, so there's that as a positive. And he recognizes that he's kind of broken through now. He had six catches, 118 yards, a couple of touchdowns, and he believes that he is very close.
We right there, bro. We're not too far away. We just got to finish in the end, and that's the biggest thing right now. Like I said, bro, we've been losing the last three games by one possession and, you know, like 3 points, so we just got to finish at the end.
Yeah, that's the thing, but you don't get those weeks back. And the AFC is so much tougher than the NFC from top to bottom. So to put yourself in an 0-3 hole, I think that's a little bit of a steeper climb to get back out and get to the playoffs. The North, obviously, very competitive all the way through, though not impossible. Yeah, it really felt good for Chase to get back into the end zone on Monday night.
I just wanted to make a play for the guys, man. Just felt like a relief moment for me, you know what I'm saying? And all this BS that was going on this offseason and prior to the season, I'm just happy that it's over with and I'm finally playing ball and having fun with the guys. That's what matters most for me.
You feel like you're back to your normal self?
I feel like I'm having fun again.
Did you sense at one point you weren't having fun?
Well, no.
How long, what did it take to snap out of just a big game?
A big play.
So he says, I feel like I'm having fun again. And then they follow up with, does that mean you weren't having fun? Obvi. And there's a big hesitation. No. Now, does that mean no? I don't mean I wasn't having fun, or no, I wasn't having fun. It can be interpreted either way. But the BS of the offseason, sounds like there's still a bit of a wound there, right? So let's not rip off the Band-Aid or rip off the scab. Let's just leave it and get him back into the groove, or keep him back into the groove. That's got to be the perspective of the Cincinnati Bengals. So their game coming up this week four. Yeah, you want to talk about dire. I feel like the Dallas Cowboys desperately needed a win on Thursday night. And hey, you can take the Panthers lightly at your own peril. But we saw what happened with the Raiders. So I'm not sure the Bengals were ready to play against the Patriots when the season kicked off, and they paid for it dearly. Well, now they're on the road at Carolina. No, that is not one of the games of the week either. But you know what's looming the week after? The Ravens. So they better get their acts together if they want to be able to be competitive against Baltimore. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I know we're not there yet in the AFC North, but we are there with a big division game against the Packers, or Vikings against the Packers. Kevin O'Connell, he just wants his guys to stay locked in.
Excited for this week. First game in the NFC North. Football team's got to, you know, stick with what has really worked early on in this football season, which is preparation, making sure we're dialed in, and we'll be ready to go compete against a really, really good team. Matt's doing a great job. Jeff Hafley, you know, Bisaccia, all those guys are some of the best coaches in our league.
This is the game that I've chosen as my game of the week. I'm really interested to see how this plays out. And like I said, early season gauge for this division, which is going to be tough. I mean, while we don't know about Jordan Love, we do believe that Sam Darnold's on track and he's just dealing with some bruises. But Matt LaFleur continuing to field questions about his QB.
Not that I expect you to tell us, but do you have a feel at all for Sunday with him, or is it really just still up in the air?
We'll see. We'll give him up to game time.
It's his favorite thing now. His favorite thing is we'll see.
We'll see.
He says that over and over. If reporters try to rephrase the question in a different way, he just keeps saying, we'll see.
We'll see.
Uh-huh. It's a little bit like Kyle Shanahan. Well, and that makes sense, right? Considering the coaching tree, but the little bit about Kyle Shanahan where he just gets so annoyed when people ask him about his quarterbacks. Now, he hasn't had to deal with the question of quarterback health and who's your QB1 for a while now. It's been not quite 2 years with Brock Purdy. But he gets so annoyed when people pepper him with questions about QB1. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. While we're talking about QBs, remember back in the preseason and even in the offseason when the rift, and I'm using my air quotations, between Jalen Hurts and Nick Sirianni was a thing. Well, Jalen continued to say, we have a great relationship. Nick Sirianni said the same thing. And I mean, the Eagles would like to put some wins together, of course, but it seems like the temperature is a little less hot.
I've been really focused on just attacking every day. And I think this team has been the same way. And Nick's putting his best effort forward in doing that, you know, and he's doing a great job in leading, delivering a message. And in the end, we just have to stay together through any moment.
Whenever he speaks, he's always waxing philosophical. You notice that? There's always a lesson to be learned when Jalen Hurts is talking.
Very measured.
Very thoughtful. Very measured. Yes. So I don't know if there's a rift or not. I don't think it's necessary to like all of your coworkers and your teammates, whether we're talking about a corporate boardroom or whether we're talking about a team. I don't think that's where chemistry comes from. It's helpful if you like everyone, but with an active roster of 53, and my God, sometimes coaching staffs that look like they are also 53 people. I mean, they're just humongous, right? These days, I think they've removed the cap on the number of coaches in college, right? So you're starting to see these coaching staffs that rival NFL. There's so many different people on the sideline. So yeah, you're talking about a travel party of well over 100 people. So I don't think it's necessary with a group that big. But the chemistry comes from more the respect and caring about the team goals and the team more than you care about yourself. Sure, it helps if you like the guys you're lining up next to, but I don't think it's necessary. But that's going to be an interesting battle for them on the road just because the Colts have played some real tough D. We know the Eagles, they wasted a ton of yards and opportunities last week against the Saints. They only had the 15 points, though they did dominate. They had a ton of yards, just a couple of really bad turnovers by Jalen and the Eagles offense. And while we're talking about offense, well, generally we think of Patrick Mahomes, or I'll just speak for me, I think of Patrick Mahomes as the best quarterback in the NFL. Suppose that's a debate. Maybe. Maybe it's a debate. But we also know the last couple years with the turnover of the guys around him, or injuries too, that the offense has started slowly. Well, this year is no exception. He's actually said, I'm not playing my best football. I don't, you know, I'm still trying to find that rhythm. He talked about missing throws that he normally makes, and he's had some bad ones that have resulted in interceptions. But also, Travis Kelce. I take this deep breath here so I don't sigh audibly over the microphone. It is mind-blowing to me that people are pointing to a relationship outside of football as the reason why he might not be succeeding. It's BS is what it is. I would say probably all, but I'll go conservative. 95% of NFL players have relationships. 95% of them have families. If they're not married, they've got girlfriends. Many of them have children. They've got moms and dads and siblings. And in many cases, they've got people who are counting on them to provide for them. I get that Travis Kelce has a lot going on outside of football. He's got his big podcast. He and his brother do a lot of commercials. And he's also got a high profile relationship. But if we know anything about the best athletes in the world, and the Chiefs are no exception. They have been on top of the NFL now, for the most part, for the past 6 years. These athletes can focus. They can lock in. They are mentally tough enough to be able to leave personal off the field. And when they get on the field, they're focused on football. It's dumb. It, like, seriously dumb. And I would just be offended if there were people in my business who actually think that's the case. Here's my advice. When you hear that from someone in our business, assume they're trolling you and they're just trying to get the clickbait, because that's stupid. They've all got relationships and personal lives. Everybody does. It's the ability of these athletes to be able to hone in on what matters most. And I mean, we're not just talking about relationships. How about the, I don't know, 70,000 fans who are screaming and yelling when you go on the road? There's a lot you have to block out. When you screw up and you turn the ball over or you miss a tackle, you got to be able to block out the fact that you just messed up or you cost your team. Their mental toughness is part of the package. It's part of the reason why they are playing in the best league in the world and why they're at the highest level of their sport. So, no, Travis Kelce is not distracted by Taylor Swift. But all of that to say, of course, Mahomes needs to get him more involved in the offense.
I want to get him the ball more, whereas he's just like, I just want to win, man. I don't care. Like, I'll run these routes and take guys with me so that other guys can get open. But we understand he's an important part of this offense, and we want to make sure that we're still featuring him. But at the same time, if defenses are going to take away him, I'll get the ball to other guys and let them make plays.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the deal. That's what we've heard from Mahomes and from Andy Reid, is that when you are as good as Travis Kelce and when you are so dangerous, especially because he and Mahomes are like an old married couple in sports, I mean, their productivity is based on their relationship and the communication and the nonverbal communication and knowing what the other one's going to do. They can finish each other's sentences. I mean, they're not only longtime teammates, but they're really good friends. They do things outside of football together. And so, in fact, didn't they start a steakhouse together? Like, they opened a steakhouse this past offseason, I believe. So they're business partners too. So yeah, these guys have a connection that extends far beyond just football. But of course, for Patrick Mahomes, and that's why Kelce is so dangerous. For Patrick Mahomes, he's got other options. And if Kelce takes two defenders with him, just by doing the simple math, that means there are other guys who are available and who are open. And no doubt, at some point, you have to pick your poison with the Chiefs. And right now, teams are keying more on Kelce. Now, he has had a couple of drops, too, in just situations where he could have made a better play. But it's 3 weeks in, I have no doubt he'll make an impact. Remember last year when he was on his podcast talking about how the offense was bleeping sucked? And then, of course, they get to the playoffs and all of a sudden he's a different guy. Like, that was when he made his mark, was in the postseason again.
Yeah, they have some Patriot vibes in terms of that stuff. And maybe not the best regular season, but hey, they're gonna hit you hard in the playoffs.
Yeah, you poke the bear and mm-hmm. you'll get the best of the Chiefs. They've got that much experience. At A-Law Radio, lots of people spirited voting already with our Game of the Week as well as our Facebook page, 855-212-4227. We'll get to more, a little more of what's happening this weekend, including Georgia-Alabama, because it's important. Also, I've heard from a couple of my friends in Georgia now who've lost power. My best friend actually just texted me and said that she is in the basement sleeping because she was worried that if there was a tornado warning, she wouldn't be able to get the dogs downstairs in time, and so she slept in the basement. I know there's been all kinds of flooding in the Atlanta area. It's just a lot of water, a lot of wind, a lot of rage there with Helene. Here's our latest sports update, and here's Peter Schwartz.
Infinity Sports Network, Sports Flash.
Let's begin with Thursday night football.
From the 45, first down, shotgun, good blitz pickup, and Prescott down the left side. Lamb broke the tackle. 35, outruns three men into the end zone. Touchdown, CeeDee Lamb.
Brad Chem on Cowboys Radio. The Cowboys beat the Giants 20-15. Dak Prescott, 221 yards and two touchdowns. Won the CeeDee Lamb, who had seven catches for 98 yards. Micah Parsons left the game in the fourth quarter with an ankle injury. He's set for an MRI on Friday. Now to baseball, and we start in Oakland and the end of an era.
Now the 1-2 pitch. Here it is by Mason. He turns, he's ready, he throws, and it's swung on and hit to third. He was left up with it. Schumann, he turns, he throws, and the A's have won it. Mason Miller slams the door on the Rangers as the curtain comes down on 57 incredible years of A's baseball at the Coliseum.
Ken Korak on A's Radio. The A's beat the Rangers 3-2. Final game in the Coliseum in front of 46,889. Elsewhere, Dodgers over the Padres 7-2. In 13, the Marlins beat the Twins 8-6. Yankees clinched the AL East, beat the Orioles 10-1. Aaron Judge hit his 58th home run. Rockies beat the Cardinals 10-8. White Sox over the Angels 7-0. The Tigers win a fifth in a row. They beat the Rays 4-3. The Royals beat the Nationals 7-4. And the Brewers top the Pirates 5-2. A judge in the Dominican Republic ruled that Rays shortstop Wander Franco must stand trial on charges that he sexually abused a minor. Former NBA MVP Derrick Rose announced his retirement. College football, it was Army over Temple 42-14. Golf, the USA sweeps all five matches Thursday at the opening session of the President's Cup. I'm Peter Schwartz.
855-212-4227. That's the number to get in touch with us, the Infinity Sports Network. Give us a call, 855-212-4227.
Now in there, new set of downs to work with. Prescott will throw it. Left side. It's caught by Lamb. Breaking away. Lamb, goodbye. Touchdown, Cowboys. Lamb is explosive.
We got to play with our chip on our shoulder. We can't really get too content with who we are and who we have on this roster. Obviously, you look from top to bottom, we could go toe-to-toe with anybody. But staying positive. Again, staying true to who we are, making our right plays, being what we got to be, and then This will be the result.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
CeeDee Lamb took responsibility, took ownership last week. He said everyone in the Dallas Cowboys locker room spoke up and they all aired their grievances and realized they had got to get on the same page. So once that emotion came out, they, on a short work week, able to go into MetLife Stadium in New York, New Jersey area, and beat the rival Giants. And he has seven catches, 98 yards, and the score you hear with Ian Eagle on the Westwood One radio network. A couple of notes for injuries, though. Malik Nabers, the terrific wide receiver, rookie wide receiver for the New York Giants, he's dealing with a concussion from late in the game. And we also are waiting for updates today on Micah Parsons, who has to have an MRI on an injured ankle. And so he He left with, well, earlier in the game, he was checked out for a concussion because there was a hard hit, and the ref made him go off the field into the blue tent. So then he came back from that, but he was icing his ankle after the game, and he said he didn't know anything, just that he has an MRI coming up today, and he's going to try to get back next week. Now, the good news is that he's got until, well, they've got the mini bye, right, because they played on Thursday Night Football. Also, DeMarcus Lawrence, a right foot injury. He did not return either, but the x-rays for Parsons at the stadium were negative. And also, Lawrence was saying that this injury was not related to the foot surgeries that he had earlier in his career. He said he was okay, but we'll also have an MRI coming up on Friday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. The injuries are kind of the sucky part. Every single week, we have to talk about newer injuries, but the hope is that a lot of these guys will get healthy and be back later in the year. For the Giants, they went from having a terrific first half of offense against the Cleveland Browns and then the defense making that stand up to the frustration of Thursday night and not getting into the end zone. So no tutties, no TDs, no pay dirt, no touchdown celebrations, none of that. Instead, they settled for 5 field goals. I mean, they only got into the red zone twice, but they just were not able to punch it in. And what a relief that would have been. Not so much on Daniel Jones. He played pretty well. In fact, he was really accurate. But what was it, 5 drops? 5 drops, producer Pete, and a couple of them on critical third and fourth down.
50.
Yeah, there definitely were a bunch of drops. If you would like to go back and watch the game, it's now re-airing on NFL Network for, I think, the 3rd time tonight. I'm pretty sure that when I walked in the studio, so this would have been, gosh, a little after midnight Eastern time, the game was re-airing the first time. Because as soon as it's done on Prime, they flip it on NFL Network. It's re-aired since another time and a half, because now they're into the fourth quarter again. And I've seen the game, this is its 3rd iteration. Well, 4th, because I watched it on Prime itself.
Well, there was not many touchdowns except for the first couple of touchdowns from the Cowboys. So that game moved pretty fast.
It did. It was... What did Jim Rome put on social? I saw him post, embrace the suck. So that's what I'm doing. They say we're supposed to embrace the suck. So that's what I'm doing with Cowboys and Giants. I mean, Daniel Jones, as I say, he played well. He was pretty frustrated because they could not get the 6.
We're expected to score touchdowns and put points on the board. And in a game that I felt like we were able to do a lot and move the ball well and you know, execute a lot of stuff well. We didn't execute the red zone stuff.
The other thing that stands out is that the run defense was able to limit the Giants. Now, they don't have a bell cow, if you will. They don't have a Derrick Henry or a Lamar Jackson, obvi. But they only rushed 26 yards against the Cowboys. So if this is how the Cowboys defense resets, great. That's really important, but more important that they get healthy before their next game. At A-Law Radio, After Hours with Amy Lawrence, I know a lot of focus on Hurricane Helene. I mentioned I've heard from a couple of friends in Georgia. One's in the Atlanta area, and she's hunkered down in the basement with her pets. Another one in the Augusta area, and they just lost power. And the latest that I saw, more than 2 million customers without power in the southeast, states of emergencies all over the place, a lot of damage, a lot of flooding. And I don't say that to be trite, or say this to be trite. I always appreciate when coming out of a natural disaster or a tragedy that people rally around sports. They have this uncanny ability to bring people together and to heal. And I hope that people in Georgia will be able to watch and will still be looking forward to their Bulldogs against Alabama. It's a huge SEC clash coming up. Both teams are 3-0. And as you can imagine, with the expanding conference and the new teams that are in, there's not a whole lot of margin for error. You're talking about needing to take care of your business, especially when you're at home. That's huge, too. And Alabama, while it's different with Caleb DeBoer, especially on the defensive side, it's still Alabama, and they still have incredible athletes and great coaching and a lot of experience on that staff. And, of course, Kirby Smart, who certainly is familiar with Alabama and familiar with what the challenge will be on Saturday.
They're different defensively, for sure. You know, obviously the offensive staff and defensive staff changed. But there's remnants. I mean, because the quarterback's the same, so you keep some things the same with them. And, you know, most of college football is doing something similar. So there's some similarities into that.
Getting into our SEC opener, so it's exciting for us and our program. And obviously with Georgia coming in here, ton of respect for Coach Smart and everything he's accomplished in his career. And obviously there at Georgia with all the success they've had.
So a couple of fun numbers to throw out at you, and I know the numbers don't mean everything, but it is kind of fun to use them as a framework for the game coming up. Kirby Smart, who, of course, was not only a coach under Saban, but they have a great relationship, and he used to be the Tide defensive coordinator. Against the Tide, since he left, he's 1-5. But this is no longer Saban, right? And so there's one number that I think is fascinating. Another number, and this is kind of the something's got to give category, the Bulldogs have the number one pass defense in the nation, but Jalen Milroe, he's started off like a house on fire as the veteran quarterback for Bama, nearly 600 yards and 8 touchdowns so far, and he's not thrown a pick for the Tide. So something there has got to give. You wouldn't expect to see those numbers from Jalen. So can Alabama find other ways against that Bulldogs defense? And also, let's not miss out on Carson Beck. He's no slouch. He and I hate wins as a QB stat. That to me is bogus. But he is, as the starting quarterback for the Dogs, a guy who has had great success, and with him as their starter, they are 6-1 against teams that are ranked in the top 20. So we're talking about power versus power and an incredible clash. And as much as this sounds really corny and not something that I typically do, this is date night on Saturday night, because I will be in pain and probably not feel like moving a whole lot after running a half marathon Saturday morning. And so I suggested this as date night with probably popcorn or something to my husband, and his whole face lit up. So I guess that was a yes. I didn't even need to wait to hear from him. His team, Texas, is playing a little bit earlier. And at this point, and Texas is the number one team in the nation. We don't know if it will be Quinn Ewers or if it will be Arch Manning who starts again. That's a day-to-day or daytime, day-of decision. So yeah, lots of excitement in this football weekend. Mostly, though, we got to get out of the storm there in the Southeast where college football is king. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on our Facebook page as well as on our show Twix at Amy After Hours. Final weekend of the baseball regular season, too, so I don't want that to get lost. Congratulations to the Dodgers, who lock up another NL West title, 11 in 12 years. But this is the first for Shohei Ohtani, which makes it different. Do you know, Pete, get this. I heard this on the Dodgers radio network last night. In his last opportunities to bat with runners in scoring position, would you like to know his numbers? He's 10 for 11. His last 11 opportunities with runners in scoring position, he has 10 hits. Is that insane?
It is, but you know what? I would have guessed 11.
Well, he's 10 for 11. Also, congratulations to the Yankees. They finally hold off the Orioles and clinch the AL East. And we're back Sunday night after a busy weekend to go over it all. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Boom!